This podcast is made possible in part by Winona, where menopause care is made easy. Winona offers personalized bioidentical hormone replacement therapy to ease your menopause journey. Discover compassionate care and personalized treatments delivered to your doorstep at buywinona.com. Check your eligibility and start feeling like your best self again starting today.
Hola.
Welcome to
Word to Your Mama, the podcast that amplifies diverse voices and celebrates shared experiences. Hosted by me, Ritzy P., a Latina creative entrepreneur with a background in art, music, and new web technologies. From Academy and Emmy winners to activists, artists, and builders, we celebrate the rich diversity of my multicultural tribe. There will be special guests, mad laughs, and absolutely no BS. Word to Your Mama drops every Monday on your favorite podcast platform. Hot flashes, hair loss, joint pain, weight gain, brain fog, anxiety. Those are just a few of the lovely symptoms that women go through when they're perimenopausal and menopausal. That's just part of life. Perimenopause can last up to 10 years, ladies, up to 10 years. There's a lot of information that I didn't know until I started this journey, right? So I want to make sure that I have people on here to give us the right information so we can make an informed decision on how we move forward dealing with this phase of our life. So today I have Dr. Kathleen Brown. She is an OBGYN. She's also the medical director of Winona, that's a menopause care service. She's also mother of three. She loves to garden and she loves going to live music events. So in this episode, if there's any questions you ever had about perimenopause and menopause, because there's so much misinformation out there, this is the episode for you. This is the one. This is one maybe of many, but for sure, this is one you have to listen to or watch. So things that we discuss is why Dr. Brown decided to become an advocate for women's menopause care. Some of the myths and misconceptions regarding perimenopause and menopause. What are bioidentical hormones? What is the bioidentical hormone replacement treatment? And how does it help? And does it or does it not cause cancer? Because I was told that it did and that I couldn't be on it because of the history of my mom passing away with breast cancer. So we get into that. Also, what women can do to prep their bodies for the process of menopause and so much more. So yes, to get all the good bits, you have to listen to this episode. I had a wonderful conversation with Dr. Kathleen Brown. And, you know, it's just showing she's a woman that even as a doctor herself, an OBGYN, she wasn't getting the care and the time committed to this specific issue when she started going through the process, hence why she moved into this. I feel this is a very important conversation. There's a lot of questions that are answered. And now I feel that I'm more informed as I'm trying to figure out which menopause care service that I want to go with. I'm doing the research, kids. I'm doing the research. In this episode, this conversation has really helped me. So let's do this. Hi, Dr. Brown. How are you? Thank you so much for being here.
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start off with a quick question. You're out and about, you're at a party. People ask you, what do you do? What is the usual answer right off the bat to a stranger?
Well, to a stranger, it depends on what the venue is. Usually I just go with, I work at a hospital. And then, depending who the audience is, usually they make the assumption because I'm female that I'm a nurse right off the bat.
Right, right.
And usually if it's a contractor coming to give me an estimate at the house or something like that, I say, mm-hmm.
Right.
But no, I mean, depending on who the audience is and if it's, parents of my kids' friends and stuff like that, I'll tell them I'm a doctor. And a lot of times I get like a double take and they say, really? I'm like, yeah, really.
Right. But so let the folks know what kind of doctor, what kind of practice, and what do you do?
Sure. So I'm an OBGYN, so an obstetrician gynecologist. And I've spent most of my career heavy on the obstetric side, you know, because in that field, there's a lot of babies being born. A lot of people need to be around for those deliveries. But as I've gotten older myself and started going through midlife, I've also started focusing more on caring for other women in midlife. As many of your listeners probably know, I mean, the women especially, we tend to notice that there's not a lot of focus placed on women's wellness in the world. Mm-hmm. So much research and so much time and effort has gone into men and erectile dysfunction and so many other things, but not a lot of focus, especially in women's health, even has been put on like the menopausal transition and women in midlife and as we age. So because I have a particularly keen interest in that as I'm going through it myself, that's become a second focus for me in this part of my career. So I do a little bit of everything. I work at a hospital as a full-time OB hospitalist, meaning that I do inpatient obstetrics. My team is like the backup team for the private practice doc. So if they can't be in two places at once, or if somebody comes in and is uninsured or maybe had no prenatal care, which still happens occasionally, then my team takes care of them. We're the break class in case of emergency people. And then when I'm not at the hospital, I also do telemedicine care for menopause for patients as well.
Nice. And so tell us a little background of where you were born and raised.
Sure. So I was actually born and raised in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So born in the Roxboro-Manayunk area, lived there all my life until I went away to college. Had this dream of going to some fancy liberal arts school, but there was no money. Nobody in my family had gone to college before I did. And so there really was no scholarship fund or anything. So I ended up going to a small state school in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, that probably no one has ever heard of, called Shippensburg University, and went on an Army scholarship, actually. So I did the ROTC because when I went there to visit the school, they were rappelling off the gym. And I thought, well, that looks like a cool class. I want to learn to do that. And next thing you know, I applied for a scholarship and ended up getting that. And I knew I always wanted to be a doctor. So I also, when I applied to medical school, I took an Army scholarship for medical school as well. And then came back to Philly for med school, went to the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. And then after I graduated, I went right into active duty in the Army. And so moved around a little bit. I did my my residency training in Hawaii, in Honolulu, which was quite the hardship. Not really. Right. When I was not at work, you know, because when you're a resident, they call you a resident because you basically live at the hospital, because you have to in order to see everything that you need to see and get the breadth of knowledge that you need in order to be a good doctor. So when you're off, it's nice to be in an environment where you can pretend like you're a tourist and do vacation things to balance out the hard work. Right. And from there, after I did my training there, I lived in El Paso, Texas for a while. Oh. Got very good at my Spanish there because we had a lot of Mexican Americans that crossed over the border. And then from there, I went to North Carolina, then back to Texas. And then ultimately, after I got out of the military, went through some life transitions, I moved back to the Philadelphia area. So now I live in the Philadelphia suburbs with my family.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah.
So you said you've always known that you wanted to be a doctor, but do you remember that moment, whatever age you might have been, that you said, ah, that's what I want to be? And then after that, when was the moment? Was it because you were transitioning yourself and in midlife that you decided, I want to also want to focus on menopause care?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the earliest memory I have is going to my pediatrician. And I remember they had these great big wooden like horses that you could, like the hobby horse that you could ride on in the waiting room. And then after you checked out, I remember they give you these big long pretzel rods. And I thought, well, this is a cool job. You get to ride on horses and eat pretzels. and I just remember being very fond of the whole experience of going to that doctor. And so I really thought I wanted to be a pediatrician, but you know, sometimes our parents keep those little books, you know, that say, you know, who your friends were in first grade and what you wanted to be when you grow up, like those little log books. mine was always like doctor slash rock star, doctor slash ballerina. You know, I always thought I could do it all, like even from an early age. But then when I got to, when you go to medical school, the first 2 years of medical school are all in the classroom, but the second 2 years are all practical, like in hospitals, in doctor's offices. And when I actually got to experience what pediatrics was like, I didn't really like it. I didn't like dealing with the parents.
Right.
And I didn't like that my patients couldn't tell me what was wrong all the time. And seeing kids suffer was too hard. I didn't enjoy that. And I myself had had some very negative experiences with my own women's healthcare. And I think that far too many of us have. Not only that, but just as women, I mean, the statistics on inappropriate like sexual behavior and incest and molestation and rape are just, it's staggering. I think that I kind of felt like a calling to make a difference for women. So I kind of like in all my clinical rotations, I naturally gravitated toward taking care of women. And even when I was on my family practice rotation or internal medicine, the residents that were training me, they would find out like, oh, she's good at pelvic exams. Have her do your pelvic exams for you. Like that I just like they kept kind of gearing me into that way and throwing all that work at me. And I just enjoyed it. And I tried very, very hard to like an easier specialty with better hours because God knows babies come all hours of the night.
Right.
But no matter what I tried to really like, I just kept coming back to women's health. And I just, it was one of those things that I felt like a natural pull, like a gravitation toward. And I really felt like, you know, I could make a difference in the field and make it an experience different than what I had experienced when I was a, you know, a young girl having my first exam and first pap smear and stuff like that.
Oh, I love that story. I love that story because of the experience that you had. You want to ensure that other women don't have to go through that and change the way the industry is. And I feel there's so many people that are listening or watching right now that resonates with them because all of us have had that those experiences. And what's also disheartening sometimes is that it's a woman doctor as well that we don't feel that we're getting the type of care or, you know, that we need. And am I correct? I believe I saw Maria Shriver at a conference. She was talking about women's health and that the research and the amazing work that she's doing for Alzheimer's, but also for women's health in general. She mentioned, I believe she mentioned that the studies on hormones and stuff were done on men for like the longest time. Or something. Is that correct? Yeah.
Initially, women were not allowed to be research subjects when medicine really started doing research. I mean, when you think about the history of the medical profession, it's a really sordid past because doctors did some really crazy stuff in the early days, you know, like using leeches to treat. And then we thought that wasn't so good. Now we use it again. Or, you know, when someone had an illness, we thought that their blood was toxic. And so we would bleed them, you know, we would purposely make them bleed to get the toxins out and get the disease out. And really in modern medicine, you know, our biggest oath that we take when we graduate is to first do no harm. But the early years of medicine were very harmful. Like you went to the hospital and you went to the hospital to die, you know, really, there was a lot more focus on people doing things more at home. And then as medicine transitioned and we started to really know that like, hey, we needed to really study this. We need to make evidence-based practice. You know, we need to see what actually works, what's good for patients, what makes people better. I mean, one of the single most biggest transitions was like learning that hand washing made a difference. I mean, to think about that now, right? You know, post-COVID, you know, like to think about the fact that hundreds of years ago, doctors would go from one surgery and go right into the next surgery and having not washed their hands between. Right. Isn't that crazy?
Unsanitary.
You know, simple things like that. But yeah, they didn't believe that women could be research subjects because of the risk of pregnancy and a baby being exposed to something. So it wasn't until really the modern age of medicine that women were part of research studies. And then one of the biggest hormone studies, you know, to guide menopause care was actually done really badly, but it was the reason why it was called the Women's Health Initiative Study. And it came out with a lot of information that scared people from hormones. And basically swung that pendulum and basically told us that, you know, women need to suffer. It's a natural part of thing. Hormones are dangerous. They're going to cause cancer. And so then we had this whole generation of doctors, me included. I remember in residency learning about hormone replacement therapy and being told by my attendings that just memorize this for the test. You need to know what it's supposed to do, but you're never going to use it. Women don't use it anymore because it's too risky. Wow. And so, yeah, like I remember being told, like, you're really not going to see this in practice. You just need to know this for your exam. So it's crazy to think about that.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. So a couple of years ago, it might've been pre-pandemic. I have a functional medicine doctor out here in the desert. I live in Palm Springs, and she had me do the, I don't know, 2 to 3 blood tests during my cycle. And she was like, oh yeah, you're in perimenopause. I was like, what does that mean? And she was explaining it to me, and you know, it's before the time before, as your body's getting, it transitioning into menopause. And I asked her, well, how long does that last? She's like, it could last to 10 years. My brain exploded. And I was like, what are you saying to me right now? So then I did all this research and this deep dive. And another doctor, she sent me to another doctor, endocrinologist. She barely saw me, send me a bunch of, hormones. And I read this long safety thing. And I was like, I don't know if that's for me right now. But what I did do is I try to do as much research as possible by people, by women, by people that look like me, which was very hard to do at the time. And I've just been like the menopause woman, telling all the women that I meet in my travels as a speaker, this is what's happening to me. Be ready. Like, this is what you have to do. So, and then we got into these, I've been getting these conversations. I feel like we're in the same age bracket. My mom, my grand, no one in our families talked about this. Like, it was not. So did anyone do that in your family?
You know, it's funny because as a gynecologist, I remember asking my mom and she was like, oh, I don't really remember. I don't really know if I really went through that. And I'm like, but you're like late 50s. You had to have, you know, like you did.
Right.
But I think that's a huge thing in our society too. Like, our mothers and our grandmothers, it was like so taboo to talk about what was happening in your body. And it comes from that purity culture, a lot of like religious background too. Right. Like, you know, we're allowed to be vessels for baby making, but we're not allowed to be sexual or to enjoy sex. And God forbid we talk about our periods. I mean, the fact that like, it was monumental when maxi pads and tampons could be advertised on TV, like that was controversial, you know? Crazy. But I think, you know, so much value is placed on our lives as women as far as our fertility and our reproductive potential. And then there's really not a lot of conversation on what happens when we're done that phase of our life.
Right.
You know, and as we get in our late 30s and early 40s, and even for me, like as a physician, having done a residency and studied OBGYN for 4 years, I really had the impression that like, I was going to just ride the wave and then at 50, things would start happening. That's not the way it works. Like, it's not like all of a sudden, like a switch is flicked and suddenly you downshift into menopause. It's this gradual decline. And, you know, as our bodies age, there's these little things that start happening as our ovaries are decreasing their production of hormone on their own. But it really can happen over that whole decade for some women.
Right.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. And also barely now are they even mentioning it on TV and movies. And there's a movie that was a cult classic when I was in college, and it was called Party Girl, and her aunt was having hot flash. So for us, we just thought like, oh, you have a couple hot flashes and then it's done. and then my doctor was like, no, it's not menopause until it's 12 consecutive months of no period. So that I was like, what is this? What is all of
this? And then you feel like robbed. Like, why didn't someone give me this information? Like some guidance or, you know, advice on what to expect as you're starting to go through it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy. Okay. So why don't you tell us, what is Winona and how does it differ from other menopause care services out there?
Sure. So Winona was born during the pandemic. You know, we started when access was access to care was bad and people couldn't get into the doctor. But really, Winona was born to really serve those women who don't have access to a provider who's willing to have this conversation yeah. and willing to prescribe for patients. So, you know, we have a website. When we started in 2021, we were just in two states, then three states. And when I joined, when they wanted to expand to Pennsylvania, I joined in December of 2021. Mm. And Dr. Green, who's one of our founding doctor, he just reached out to me and said, "Hey, I'm looking to expand this company into Pennsylvania." And I'm like, "What is this? What are you talking about?" And now we're in over 35 states, I think. You know, it's crazy how much it's expanded. But what we realize is that when women are trying to have this conversation and trying to open the door to talk about what's happening in this point of life, they're shut down so much. And so many women are thrown on antidepressants, or they're told, "Well, those medications are dangerous. And it's a natural part of living. So you just have to suck it up. You just have to deal with it." Yeah. You know, and for most of us, especially, you know, in our mid 40s, many of us are at the pinnacle of our career. Mm-hmm. We maybe have children that are getting older that we're taking care of, or we may be taking care of aging parents, but we're kind of at this crossroads in our life where we're really having to manage a lot. And one of the biggest problems with perimenopause and menopause is that the hormone changes can really cause brain fog, memory issues, not just hot flashes. Like, there are so many things. Like, mm-hmm. estrogen really is pervasive and through every tissue in our body, it has benefits. And so when it really starts to leave our body in large amounts, we get so many symptoms that can really destroy our day-to-day life, relationships, you know, our mood really cause a lot of problems. So we really realized that patients needed access to care. You know, they needed a way to be able to seek out, have a qualified physician, go over their medical history with them, and really determine if HRT was good for them or not. And so for patients that have a doctor who's willing to prescribe and have a conversation, they don't really need us. It's really right. for the patients who don't have that access. And so that's really what Winona is. And it's really, really easy. It's, you know, when you go to a doctor's office, normally you fill out like 3 to 5 pages of questionnaires and medical history and every surgery you've ever had. We have an online adaptive questionnaire that patients fill out that really is focused on what's most important, what high risk conditions you might have, but really what your symptoms are, what medications you're on, so that we can safely determine if you're a good candidate for hormone therapy or not. And it's free to go on and to sign up. The only thing you pay for is actually the medications. And so you can, it's asynchronous telemedicine, meaning that you don't have to schedule a visit. Like, you don't have to have a video visit like you and I are talking right now.
Right.
So you put in all your information. Depending on what state you're in, the doctor will review your information and may message you to clarify things. But ultimately, you come to a plan together, you know, with what you think might be best for you as far as a treatment plan for hormone therapy. And it's actually been great for many, many patients. I'm also a patient myself. Okay. So yeah, even as a board certified physician, going to my own family doctor, who I considered like a friend, a peer, a colleague, I went to her and I said, "You know, I'm really starting to suffer. I'm really having a hard time. I really need to start on estrogen therapy." And the doctor said, "Well, let me do some labs." I'm like, "Okay, but like, I'm a gynecologist. I'm going to tell you, like, my symptoms are more important than what the labs are going to show."
Right.
And she's like, "Well, I don't care. I need to do labs. This is how I trained, and this is what I do." I'm like, "Okay." And because one day in 1 month, she checked my estrogen and my FSH, it happened to look pretty good for that one day. She said, "No, you're not a candidate. You're not menopausal yet. I really can't prescribe this to you safely until I know your levels are low." And I tried to show her the evidence. I tried to show her the studies, and she wasn't having it. So even myself, like, as an educated physician right. trying to get treatment, I was shut down too.
Right.
Which is crazy, right?
The barriers that we have just to try to get quality healthcare. And, you know, when I had a couple years ago, when they sent me all the hormones and it had like the long thing, and I was like, there was no one to have a conversation. And this is what I like. You mm-hmm. can have these questions, this back and forth, to really find what is the best course of action to start, right? And
right.
it's a trial and error thing, right? With any
yes.
thing.
Yeah.
Right? So
totally.
I started off on, for the past couple of years, since that moment, I've been on
you know, supplements, you know, for menopause. Mm-hmm. And they immediately helped significantly, along with, you know, walking and how I ate. All that was great. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'll just do this the whole time. But as I started doing research and as I started living, my symptoms got worse and different and mm-hmm. all these different things, because it's a change, right? We're
it's a dynamic process. Yeah.
Right.
Constantly.
So now I'm like, I know I need to do this. I want to see if I am a good candidate. So that's why I'm having folks like yourself to talk about the different services that are out there and the different approaches, mm-hmm. because I want people to be informed, to make an informed decision. And for myself too, yeah. it's like, which service am I going to start off with? Maybe this one might be fantastic for me, but might not be for my best friend, and right. vice versa, exactly. right? Because it's different. They might live in another state. I mean, it depends on who the person is. I mean, it's so many different factors. So
yeah, I tell patients, it's kind of like same thing with birth control too. Like when we're earlier in our lives, like trying to find the right medication for many of us is like trying on clothes, trying on a pair of jeans, right? Yeah, every woman likes a different fit, a different cut. We're all built differently. You can't take the same pair of jeans and it's not going to fit everyone perfectly. Unless right. you're in that movie, The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants or something.
Where they fit everybody.
Right? But really, it really is trial and error. And it's that same kind of thing. It's like, you know, just trying to try something, see how you respond, readjust, you know, and really trying to figure out what fits into your lifestyle the best. Because I could have the world's greatest and latest medication, but it might not fit into your life good, you know. Right. And so we really have to take every patient as an individual and really figure out what works for them the best.
Yeah, I think that's a great approach. And when I was doing research on Winona, I really appreciated that there are a lot of videos answering certain questions and certain mm-hmm. questions that I had. And I like the approach that it's not, HRT is not for everyone, but you mm-hmm. have the like you said, the form, the adaptive form that they could see by answering the questions. Maybe there's a few people that maybe are not a candidate for this at all. And there's a few people, right. but you're able to find that out. And you don't want to prescribe someone that's in that, falls within that category, this, you know, resolution, this journey for this. So, you know, what are some common misconceptions that people have about menopause, perimenopause that you've encountered?
I think one of the biggest misconceptions, especially even patients coming to seek care, is that they feel like if they start HRT, that they are surefire going to get cancer.
Yeah.
And they are afraid that they're going to die of cancer. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions because the leading cause of death for women is not breast cancer. It's not ovarian cancer. Yeah. It's not even colon cancer. It's heart disease.
Right.
And what women don't realize is that estrogen is so beneficial for our heart and our blood vessels that provide blood to the heart and feed our heart, that when that estrogen is out, you know, that we start to notice like this rapid aging process. We can get, you know, hardening of the arteries. We can get, you know, coronary artery disease. And so HRT actually helps that. HRT, especially estrogen, is heart protective or cardioprotective. And so I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions. And I think one of the things I really like about Winona is that one of our other missions is not just to get out there and provide medication to everybody, but it's really to educate.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of information and really good, solid medical advice and, you know, Q&As that we have on our website, and all that's free, available for patients, which is nice because I really believe, like throughout my career, I would much rather have a patient that came to me with background knowledge or that looked into something more. I don't want to be the old dictatorial patriarchal doctor that says, you need this, you know?
Right.
It really has to be like a shared process where we talk about, and it's you're a partner with your physician and your right. care. You know, it's not like we just should dictate things like they did 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so that knowledge is such important power for women. You know, the yes. more you learn about your own body and about what's happening, the more you can make educated decisions about what might work best for you.
Sure. Because you have to be your own best advocate. I think a lot of us were raised yes. to whatever the doctor says, that's it. And I've been a sick kid since I was young. So I've dealt with doctors and I've had to be my own best advocate. And that's how I found out I had this rare disease, because I did the research and I had my labs. And then I went to different doctors and I was like, this is what I think I have. And if they didn't even want to investigate, then I went to another doctor. And then there was a woman doctor, head of endocrinology at Cedars-Sinai. And she was upset that I did research. I didn't think that I knew more than her. I wanted to have this back and forth. Like, this is what I think I have. Mm-hmm. And then she said, no, you don't. And what I keep forgetting to do is I want to send her a photo of the tumor that was taken out that she thought I didn't have.
Wow.
So I always tell people, you have to be your best advocates. Get second, third opinions if possible for whatever it might be.
Absolutely.
Because you're just, Dr. Brown, you're just a human.
Exactly.
That has a degree, that it has this experience. But at the end of the day, you're a human. You know, you could be going through so many different things at the moment. You know, like you said, those blood tests are taking a snippet of a day in time. And right. So we're not always at our best, and there's all these different factors. So I like that we, you know, these services are here now, because yes, I have a doctor that might be knowledgeable, but this is a specific concentrated effort for education, for relief, you know, the trial and error, all those different things. So,
yeah. And not to mention, when you go to the doctor, they see you for 30 minutes, if you're lucky, more accurately, 10 to 15 minutes.
Correct.
Whereas you're living in your body 24/7, you know what you're feeling, you know what you're experiencing. So, you know, you are the expert on what's happening in your body. You may not know the medical terminology. Right. You might not be able to diagnose yourself, but you know what's happening. And we just see you for such a brief time when we see you in person that, you know, we need to partner with you. So like, I always encourage patients, especially if they're not really sure what's going on. I'm a big fan of women taking diaries or keeping a log of symptoms. And now we have so many resources to do that on our phones, even put things in our calendar. There's menstrual trackers, and we even have like a menopause tracker on our website too, that patients can download and use. But like, I really encourage women, like if you're going to an in-person appointment and you know, you're only going to have a set amount of time, bring data for the doctor to look at, you know, bring your symptom diary, your symptom log, because that gives them so much more information about what you're actually going through that they wouldn't be able to gather that information in that 10-minute visit. There's no way.
Not at all. And that's how I got, when I saw, shout out to Dr. Larian in Los Angeles, I came in with him with an app tracking my calcium. And then I came in with 10 years worth of data, all my MRIs and CT scans and all my blood work. And one thing that he mentioned, he said it in front of my husband, that I want all the women to understand and hear this now. And I think you will agree. He said, women can handle so much more pain than we can. He was talking as men. He's like, and they're also conditioned to not say anything about it. So when they're saying something about it, it's a lot, and we need to listen to them. So that's when I knew I was in the right hands. And I think that's what we need to understand. Like you said, I've been tracking everything. That's a great idea. If you don't have an app, just a diary, like on such the day, the time, what was happening, what the symptoms are. And then you can look back and kind of see, oh, there's a pattern here, like this time of month or da, 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 da. So Dr. Brown, let's go into the questions and comments from the audience. We could be here all day, but I tried to narrow them down to a few. There's some that, you know, I will highlight from a specific person, and then some, so many ask the same similar question. So we'll go through them. The first one. Hilarious one. How do we skip menopause? which we can't. Services,
100% of women will go through it. You know, it's one of those things. It's inevitable.
Right.
100% of women will go through it, but not everyone needs treatment for it. You know, it's every woman's unique.
Right. Okay. So this one, are there any red flags that women might ignore thinking it's just menopause and that they could actually get checked out? you know, seems like everything comes under the umbrella of menopause. She wants to know if that question even makes sense. This is coming from one of my best friends. She's like a sister, Erin Callahan.
Something I hear from so many women in their 40s and 50s is, oh my gosh, is it hot in here? Or is it just me? But seriously, hot flashes, fatigue, and other uncomfortable symptoms associated with menopause can make you feel like you're not yourself anymore. If you're thinking, yes, that's me, I'm excited to introduce you to Winona. They're making menopause care easier with bioidentical treatments delivered to your door. The best part? Their HRT is made with plant-based bioidentical hormones, not synthetic ones. This means they're identical in molecular structure to those your body already produces, so you can feel your best naturally. And with 80% of Winona patients experiencing relief in just 90 days, it's no wonder they have a 5-star rating on Trustpilot. So if you're tired of struggling with menopause symptoms, visit buywinona.com and check your eligibility today. Once again, that's BYWINONA.com.
This is your friendly reminder to take a deep breath. Este es tu recordatorio para que respires profundo. Take a deep breath in. Inhala profundo. Exhale as you observe your breath, letting all the air out. Exhala, observando tu exhalación, dejando salir todo el aire. Would you like to help me reach my mission of teaching meditation to 1 million children? ¿Te gustaría ayudarme a alcanzar mi misión de enseñar meditación a 1 million de niños? I invite you to join me in the Decide Balance Oasis, a safe space where families can find bilingual meditations and mindfulness practices and so much more. Te invito a que te unas conmigo en el Decide Balance Oasis, un espacio seguro donde las familias pueden encontrar meditaciones bilingües y prácticas de atención plena y mucho más. Go to decidebalance.com for more details. I'll see you in the Oasis. Visita decidebalance.com para obtener más información. Nos vemos en el Oasis.
Gracias for listening to Word to Your Mama. I have a unique cross-section of guests on here because I'm a consultant who thrives at the intersection of creative innovation, tech, and community impact. There are a variety of ways we could work together, so check out ritzyperiwinkle.com to learn more. Link in the bio.
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest things we could talk about is irregular and abnormal bleeding. So in that perimenopausal transition, it can be fairly normal for women to start having erratic periods, meaning that if they were regular, like every 28 to 30 day girls were like their period came like clockwork, it was always 5 days, you know, maybe one day heavy. And then suddenly they might skip months, or they might have 2 in a month, or they might, you know, just not have any rhyme or reason to their bleeding. That can be a normal transition in perimenopause. But what women should really worry about, though, is if all of a sudden you are getting much heavier bleeding than you've ever had before, and you're filling pads, and you went maybe had one day that was heavy previously, and now like every day of your period is heavy, that's truly abnormal. And you really need to be examined, because we can get abnormal growths in the lining of our womb, in the lining of the uterus, and that can lead to precancer or cancer if we don't recognize it soon enough. But also there can be anatomical abnormalities that are benign even too, like polyps or fibroids that could be causing those symptoms too. Right. And so although the perimenopausal transition can make things irregular, it really shouldn't cause you to hemorrhage and lose so much blood that it's significant. So that would be a reason that you should definitely get checked out. That's more than just the typical bleeding changes of menopause.
Awesome. Great question. Thank you for that answer. So as you mentioned before, estrogen is so vital for so many things, cardio protective and all those different things. So now, because I've been reading and doing the research, now I had a friend who said, oh, you know, I think I have arthritis. I go, do you have arthritis, or could it be perimenopause? You know, there's all these different things now, right? There's so many things that maybe that's the culprit, and we can, you know, have a better life. So the next question, what is the best way to maintain or increase collagen for skin and joint health? Are supplements the way to go? What should I look for in collagen supplements? How much is recommended for age 46? Any other recommendations for support, healthy skin and joints during this time?
Yeah. I mean, there's not great data out there on over-the-counter supplements. That's one of the biggest things. So, you know, if I always warn patients, like if you see something advertised and they're promising you the world, you know, with the supplement, take it with a grain of salt. I mean, I do think that there are some benefit. There's some data out there on glucosamine and chondroitin for joint health. But really, nothing is better than a healthy diet, adequate hydration, eating whole foods and real foods and minimizing like the processed foods in your diet, but also movement and exercise. So our joints stay the healthiest when they're most active. Mm. And so arthritis tends to set in and joint pain tends to set in when we don't move and we don't use those joints as adequately. So, and that's another important thing for women in midlife is that even if you're not someone who really loved exercise or, you know, had a habit in your life, this is the part of your life that you really want to start doing that. Because as we age, we have so many other things that start to become a risk for us, like bone loss, weakness, arthritis, you know, our mobility. And we know that, you know, looking at studies of women that have had osteopenia or osteoporosis, like they get weak, they fall, and like that is the decline, and it's like downhill from there until they pass away. Right. You know, it's when a woman falls and breaks a hip or breaks a bone like that, it's almost like, you know, elderly women that happens to never quite gain their independence back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're the generation that's going to fight this and we're going to stay strong and we're going to make the second part of our life even better than the first is the
that's
goal.
That's right. That's right, Dr. Brown. Thank you. And that question was from Jessica, who is the founder of Marble Mujer. So the next question, is there something that women can do before starting menopause to prep their bodies for a smoother transition? And this is came from multiple women. Like, is there anything we could do beforehand, before getting to perimenopause?
Yeah, I mean, to really make the transition as easy and smooth as possible is just to try to optimize your health, right? So really focusing on, you know, a healthy body weight, regular movement, you know, even if you're not a Peloton girl or you're not somebody who goes to the gym 5 days a week, it can be little things like taking the stairs at work instead of taking the elevator, parking further away from the grocery store and walking and adding movement into your day-to-day life. Walking is such an underrated exercise. Yes. You know, if more people walked, their health would be so much better.
Right.
So, you know, little things like that. And then also really focusing on, you know, other things in moderation, like really making sure that you're not having too much alcohol, you're avoiding toxic substances in your body, like smoking, drug use, things like that. Because our body really functions best when we feed it good things.
Right.
So when we're putting other things in, like we know that women are heavy drinkers as they go through perimenopause, they can have more severe hot flashes and night sweats because of the demand and the pressure that the alcohol puts in their body too.
Right.
So that's something that's important, you know, and adding plenty of fresh foods. I think that one of the hallmarks that we should do when we go grocery shopping is to stay on the periphery of the store. All the things that can go bad are the best things that you can eat.
Right.
You know, anything in the core of the grocery store and all the shelves, it's shelf stable and it can be good for a year in your cupboard. Not the best for you.
Right.
So really trying to get every color of the rainbow in your diet as much as possible is really good.
Right.
And I think that, you know, and not thin is another thing that's important is thin is not equal healthy. I think that in our culture and especially in media, like we place so much importance and like this value of beauty on women being thin, but many women that are very thin are not healthy at all because they're not getting the nutrients that they need to stay strong, to keep their bones healthy and strong, to keep their muscles strong. And it's important for us, especially in midlife, to make sure we're getting enough protein to maintain the muscle that we have and the strength that we have.
Right.
So those are things that you can work on.
Yeah, that was a good, walking has been a lifesaver for me, you know, because it's something I can do. I can do multiple things, check my emails while I'm walking, and it's easy and it is not as, stressful on my system. You know, I'm not like stressing out trying to do like crazy, you know, boot camps and stuff like that, but it's just a nice walk. It's relaxing and it's really made a difference. As soon as my doctor said, you should walk at least 30 minutes a day, this is going to help you with your transition in this part of your life. It really has. Mm-hmm. Speaking of muscle mass, why do we lose muscle mass during this process, in this transition?
Well, it's really a matter of our metabolism kind of shutting down a little bit, but also we're not taking in as much protein as we need to. You know, I think that so many of us, men and women alike, you know, as we get older and our metabolism starts to kind of wind down a little bit, we start to decrease the amount of food that we're eating, but we decrease in the wrong way in some ways. And some people will try to cut back on everything and they're really focused on calories, but really you have to focus on getting nutrients. And so making sure you're getting plenty of protein in your diet to maintain your muscle mass is really important. But also, like, our body is going through a stress response too when we're going through menopause. So, you know, we're kind of in a fight or flight state and our stress hormone cortisol is high. And our body, if we don't feed it what it needs to maintain, then our body will feed on itself in that stress response state. And so we start to get weaker. Our muscles start to decrease in size if you're not using them and not feeding them adequately.
Right.
So it's, and we start to see all these body composition changes too, just simply because of the hormone changing, like the environment of our hormones changing. So we tend to hold on to fat more, which it's a biological, like, protective mechanism when you're in a fight or flight stressful state to hold on to calories to feed off later. We don't want to do that when we're in perimenopause or menopause. We really want to keep our weight healthy, but like the biological part of what's happening in our body is doing the opposite of what we want. And we tend to gather weight in the wrong places as all the hormones are changing and estrogen is decreasing. So that's a lot of what's happening when you start to notice the muscle mass decreasing.
And so those that are, you know, put on a successful HRT plan. Oh, and by the way, I believe Winona, is it only plant-based bioidentical hormones that you use or prescribe, or do you have other ones that you use?
Yeah, so we use bioidentical hormones that are the same hormones as our body would produce naturally. So the big difference, I mean, there are other hormone replacement therapies that are available. Like if you go to a physician and they order you something from your regular pharmacy, even though those medications may be synthetic, they may still benefit you. And there can be ones that are FDA approved that are, you know, that are bioidentical as well. But we really focus on ones that are the same hormones that your body would produce on its own if you were, you know, in a normal age.
Got it.
So,
and so it's someone that's on a successful plan and they're on HRT of any sort and it's helping them. Does that sometimes help them to maintain weight or lose weight that they've gained possibly during the transition?
Yes. Yeah. So early on, when women first start HRT, usually the first things we see as far as benefits are the decrease in symptoms. So hot flashes get better, mood improves, the quality of the hair and the skin get better. The weight loss isn't one of the things that you see right away. It's not like an instant fix, like a weight loss pill. It's more about optimizing that hormone environment and kind of reversing that stress state that our body's in so that our body can work optimally. So typically in my experience, most women, once they've gotten good symptom relief and they're at a good place with their hormone replacement therapy, like 4 to 6 months is when we start to see the difference as far as weight loss, their strength improving, that kind of thing. So it's one of those things that's like, it's not an instant fix. Right. You have to give it some time to work and to do what it needs to do. But it definitely, I mean, I've had countless numbers of patients that are, you know, writing to me on the website saying, thank you so much. Like I finally feel like myself again and I've lost 20 pounds. And, you know, my response is great. That's wonderful. Like, you know, and some women, obviously some have better results than others,
right.
You know, everyone is unique. But for the most part, many women are pretty happy with how it's helping them to get to an optimal weight.
Okay. And so going back to one of the myths that you shared earlier about that it causes cancer, especially breast cancer, that was my concern because I was told you're not a good candidate for this because your mother passed from breast cancer. Is that the case now? Or does you know, any service or any physician need more information to make that call?
I think you need more information. So right now, like what I know in the research that I've done is that, you know, really if you're on combination estrogen and progesterone, there can be a slight increase in your risk of breast cancer development. However, if you don't take HRT and you have all those other risks, your risk of heart disease, your risk of colon cancer and other things developing also goes up. So, you know, for me, it's about quality versus quantity.
Right.
So if a patient comes to me and they have a family history that's strong of breast cancer, I want to know more details. Like, I worry more about women who've had first degree relatives that have developed breast cancer under the age of 50 or even under the age of 40. That to me is much more worrisome. Or now we know that like women can get tested for the hereditary gene that can cause breast and ovarian cancer, the BRCA gene.
Right.
So if someone has had a family member with breast cancer and they know that they've had genetic testing, you know, I usually talk to patients then like, well, yeah, if you have the BRCA gene in your family, you're at much higher risk compared to someone who doesn't.
Right.
So therefore, like your risk may be higher than someone who doesn't. So, you know, but it's really a conversation. And with any treatment, I mean, there's risk to every medication.
Right.
Even Tylenol has risks.
Right.
People can overdose and die from Tylenol, which is over the counter.
Right.
But with any medication, there are risks and benefits. And it's a discussion that we have to have. And so for women whose symptoms are very bothersome, like if the benefit of the treatment outweighs the risk that they could have, then we continue.
Right.
Or if they try the treatment and they're not getting the benefits they wanted and the risks are too great, then we stop. You know, it's an ongoing dialogue and an ongoing, you know, discussion between your doctor and the patient.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And thank you for answering those questions. Before we get into the not so rapid fire questions, you know, you're a mother of three, you're, you know, full-time physician, OBGYN. And then when you're not doing that, you know, you're advising and helping women with Winona. What do you do to, you know, have your you time and ground yourself with everything that you do?
Well, so one of my biggest things that I love to do, which is it's starting to get warm here finally in the Philadelphia area, is being outside. And I got really, really into gardening, especially during COVID when we were all stuck at home and we really couldn't go anywhere. I got on TikTok actually to see what my teenager was doing because I wanted to know what he was doing on there.
Right.
And then I've really, you know how you start to like videos and it changes your algorithm. So I'm totally embedded in garden talk and like, you know, farmer talk. I have built more raised beds and transitioned my own lawn into like native gardens than anywhere else. And I'll tell you, like, throughout my life, I wish I knew that I love this. I didn't find this until I was in my 40s. But I can tell you, I've lost count of how many thousands of babies I've delivered, but I am more proud of those tomatoes and cucumbers and sweet potatoes and things that I grow.
Right. Right.
Than of all the thousand surgeries and babies I've delivered. It's funny, you know? And I've had family members and friends say, well, but you could just go to the store and just buy those. Like, why are you working so hard? I'm like, no, it's not the same. Like, it tastes so much better from the garden. So that's one of my happy places. And then also, I am a huge fan of music. And I love to go to see live music. I love to go to concerts. My most recent concert, I just saw Sting play with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Oh, how beautiful.
Which was amazing see, like, a rock singer with an orchestral background, like 20 violins behind his voice, you
beautiful.
Know, insanely
I'm
good.
Sure it's magical. Yeah.
And I just got remarried last summer and I married a musician. So music is definitely infused into my life a lot more than it had been in the past too. So that is another one of my happy places. And, you know, my kids know, like when we're making dinner, like often we turn on the Echo and we're singing and dancing in the kitchen as we're prepping food always. So,
congrats on, you know, the second, I'm not a
second
don't
chance.
Want to assume.
Yeah.
Second chance nuptials
yeah.
to a musician. And it's something that you love and you guys can, experience that together. I do the same thing, put on music. My son and I love to dance. It's one of our happy places. And I also,
absolutely.
And I love sharing. You know, my son, he has a friend that he met online. I think she's in, I don't know, another part of the country, but they've bonded on 80s music because we're awesome parents that exposed them to that. And he said, thank you so much for exposing me. So like to share that, you know, new music, but also music that we loved and then they love now.
Yes.
It's such a beautiful thing. I love it so much. And music's so powerful. Three notes. Do you were the same around the same age bracket. Do you remember Name That Tune? I can name that tune in two notes.
Yes.
But there's some songs that those three beginning notes just get me in my heart and soul. And I'm like, every time they do it for me. So I love music. I always say sometimes you hear a song
and you remember where you were and how you felt. Like, it can take you back in time. And I mean, it truly is like the soundtrack to our lives, right?
Yes, for sure. It's so powerful. I love it. Okay, so let's get into the not so rapid fire questions, the AKA slow as hell as questions. Dr. Brown, are you ready?
Sure. Let's do it.
Three words to describe yourself.
Determined, passionate, and caring.
And that's what we want. And that's what we look for in all our physicians, for sure. And especially someone that's delivering our babies. You know what I mean? Especially that. What's the best piece of advice you've received?
I would say the best piece of advice I received is to be the change you want to be in the world, right? Yes. So that's one of my favorite quotes, but I think that, you know, I've had so many times in my life, probably a lot of other women have too, where we were told like, well, women don't do that. Or, you know, if you want to have a family, you really can't have a good career. You're going to have to choose. And I think that, you know, when we're passionate about something and we really want to do something, that we don't take no for an answer, but also that we work hard to make life a better place for than we had it or, you know, than people before us. So, you know, my mission as a mom is to give my kids a childhood better than what I experienced, and have them more opportunities and be more emotionally mature than I was at their age, you know, you know, really, really do something differently.
I love that. Okay. The next one is perfect for you, knowing that you're a music fan. What's your go-to song when you need to get hyped for something? What is the go-to one?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the song Unstoppable by Sia.
Yes.
I mean, that's a great one. Lately, one of my, like, if I'm getting ready and I need something to kind of pump me up, that I turn one. On Pink.
Which song Pink. Specifically?
I mean, honestly, if I tell Echo to play Pink, I love every single song that they play. and it's funny because I took my daughter to her first concert, you know, and she was 6 years old and her first concert was a Pink concert, which now she's totally in love, you know.
Cute.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if I could choose one song, but I love everything she sings. Like, I think she's just a powerful voice.
She is.
For our generation. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that I'll go ahead and pick a song, or if you choose one later, send it to me. It's going to be added to the Word to Your Mama guest hype list, song list. And we have all the songs that every one of our guests has been on, has chosen. And then when your episode drops, we put your song at the top of the list. And we always have a link in the show notes so that everyone can hear. And it's a spectrum. We have, you know, Frank Sinatra to Little Yachty. Like, we have everything. And I think it's fantastic just to have a playlist of all these songs, you know, these hype songs that are so personal to everybody. Final question, Dr. Brown. What will be your legacy?
I mean, I think that my legacy, first and foremost, is going to be as a mom. I think that, you know, I'm irreplaceable at home, but at work, I could be replaced in an instant. You know, there's other people out there that could do what I do, and there's other people that are doing it. And I think that, you know, for my kids, I'm trying to show them to fight for what they believe in and to really, you know, do what they think is best and to reach for their dreams too. So that's probably the most important thing to me.
I love that. So final thoughts, anything you want to share with our entire audience? We have men and women, but I think especially the women that are listening, young and old, what are some takeaways that you think that they should remember, keep in mind when it comes to, you know, women's health, you know, this phase of our life health?
I think one of the most important things, no matter how old a woman is, I think it's so very important to learn about your own body, you know, learn about your own physiology, learn about your anatomy, and educate yourself on what's happening in your own body, because that's really going to give you the power to know when something's not feeling right or when you need to seek care. And also, you know, the knowledge is power, you know, that the more you learn about what's happening in your health and the more you know about what's going to happen down the road in 5 years and 10 years, it helps you to really be prepared, but it also helps us to kind of roll with it too, and to deal with things better. So I think that's important, but I really wish every woman would take a mirror and look at their own anatomy and their own genitalia and know what things were. You know, I think it's more available now for women to learn compared to 10, 20 years ago.
Right.
But there's still way too many women, especially patients that I've seen over the years, that don't even have the language or the words to talk about their bodies properly.
Right.
Don't be afraid to teach your daughters what a vulva is compared to a vagina, what the clitoris is, and you know what's happening in our bodies as it's changing, whether it be puberty or pregnancy or postpartum, or whether it's menopause, perimenopause. Like, we need to normalize women's bodies.
Yes.
And make it, you know, part of a regular conversation. It's not taboo. It really isn't. It's our health. It's so important.
Yeah. Because we're not taboo. Our bodies aren't taboo. So we need to be talking
Absolutely
about
not.
This and sharing this information. So muchísimas gracias, Dr. Brown, for being here today, sharing your wisdom and your knowledge, for being super passionate, for taking on, you know, I heard someone recently say, when an idea becomes a responsibility, you had a calling, it called you. And I really appreciate all the work that you're doing and sharing this information, because this is how things change. It's the disbursement of all this information. So thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. De nada.
Yeah. There you have it, folks. Dr. Kathleen Brown. So many gems dropped, so much knowledge that has been shared with us, so many myths that were busted, and just getting this, you know, perspective from a woman that's going through the same thing that I'm going through, the many of you that are listening to, and some of you that will be going through this, you know, an actual woman who was a OBGYN hospitalist that still couldn't get the women's health care that she deserves and needed. So that's why she went into this work. It's fascinating to me, man. It's fascinating to me what I've learned since this process started for me. And that's why I'm like, let me preach the gospel of this is coming, and we need more resources and we need more information. I really appreciate Winona's website. Looking at the videos, because I think I don't know if I mentioned it in the episode, but I vowed I would never have a guy OBGYN ever again because of the experience that I had when I was in college. And so, you know, but hearing that doctor, a male doctor, talk about the issues and talking about, you know, just the care and the time that they take, I was like, okay, maybe I'll consider doing Winona myself. There's other ones out there. I just know that it's time to see if I'm even a candidate. You know, this is being recorded a day before the 29th anniversary of my mom's passing. That she, you know, she died of breast cancer. And so, you know, maybe I go through the process and do the questionnaire and I'm not even a candidate. Maybe I'm one of those people that she discussed that they're like, nah, not at all. This isn't for you. And then I'm like, ooh, what am I going to do? You know, because I've been using the supplements and now I need to, do I up those or what else can I do? But 10 years, man, 10 years is a long time. So, yes, I hope this helps a lot of you. If there's any other questions, please feel free to reach out, because let's get those questions in. Like, let's have someone else on here from another perspective, another service, or just another completely different perspective. And let's see what they say. And then we can cross-reference that and figure out what is the best course of action to get some relief, to get some healing, because this is happening. And, you know, thinking back now, when I was editing the episode, the fact that, you know, I'm Mexican, I'm Latina, she's white, but it didn't matter. The women didn't talk, like our parents didn't talk about it. Like, it happened to them, but they just kind of like, what did they do? Just suffer through it? But I don't know if this is, I haven't done the research yet, but are symptoms different now too, or more exacerbated now because of the different stuff that's in our water and the air and the soil and the food? I mean, is that it? Because we're also busier. We're also doing other things. So does it make it worse? And is that why we're all like, what is this thing? Like, what is happening? But I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you got some amazing information. And let us know. Let us know what you thought. Let us know if you decided like, oh, yeah, I'm going to try Winona. Or, oh, you know, now I'm going to ask, or da-da-da-da-da. Let us know. And I want to make sure that I announce, if I haven't already, I can't remember. It's all a blur. I just got back from New York and I was sick. But I'm going to be coming out with the new podcast separate from this one. And it's going to be seasonal. So it'll be, you know, season one, season two, da 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 da. And it's going to be Emerging Tech Journeys. So just like Words to Your Mama, I amplify diverse voices from all the different industries and all the amazing people, folks that I know that are in my tribe. But I'm going to be amplifying diverse voices in emerging tech. So emerging tech is, what is the latest emerging tech? Right now, we're talking about anything blockchain, AI, spatial, which is like the AR, VR, XR, and gaming. So many things are happening. I mean, especially in the past couple of days, I've been like in these spaces and talking about stuff, the things that I learned and discussed in New York. I mean, it's fascinating stuff, man. And I want it to be where folks that listen to Word to Your Mama can listen to that. They don't have to be immersed in emerging tech already. There's a lot of podcasts that cover that type of stuff, but they're really geared towards people that are in the know, in that industry, know all the jargon, all the lingo. I mean, there's some that I try to listen to sometimes and I'm like, I'm in there and I don't even know. Like, that's like crazy, especially if they're talking about full-blown Agrippa crypto or full-blown on the developer side. There's some things I understand. There's something I was like, I don't even know what's happening. They lost me. So I'm making it for those that listen to Word Here Mama, those that don't, that want to just, what is happening? Who are people that look and sound like me, but that are in this industry, and why are they in it? You know, emerging tech journeys. Why are they in it? What's their journey? How do they get there? Why do they feel it's so important? And then I also want to start making the content, because I've been asked and I just haven't had a steady run of it, but to kind of break down, like, how did I even get into this? Why is it important? You know, just do little tidbits like, oh, I spoke at the UN last year about diversity and inclusion in Web3, but why? Why does it matter? And why does it matter to you? Like, even like, well, why should I care? I'm not techie. It's not going to impact. Well, yeah, no, it's good, because we're all going to be there. And why does it matter? And what kind of things are, what kind of projects are out there that are using emerging tech for social good and beyond? So anyways, look out for that. There's already an IG account that you could already start following, because it's coming soon. So, you know, start following those accounts. But yeah. You know the things. Tell your folks, tell your peeps, tell your friends. And, you know, the shop is there. T-shirts are there. Send me your photos so we can post what, you know, let me know what the phrase means to you. And I'm looking for the V-necks, looking for the V-necks for sure. And yeah, as always, we reap. Word to Your Mama is owned and produced by Ritzy P. Intro beat produced by Nico Beats. For partnership inquiries and contact info, check out wordtoyourmama.com. And as always, Word to Your Mama is brought to you by RitzyPeriwinkle.com.
And now, introducing the Supernatural Bear Corner.
Supernatural Bear.